The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome in, students of the game. My name is Alex Bauman, and I'm joined by my co-host today, Gray Oldenburg and Nathan Glidewell. We got a full house for the first time in a minute, guys, so glad to have everybody on the show together, especially with the topics we're going to cover today. Starting with Auburn football recruiting. Great. Go into what's been happening with Hugh Freeze and the Auburn Tigers.
Yeah, man. So Hugh Freeze and Auburn had their Big Cat weekend this past weekend, which, you know, every team has an end of summer event where they try and get their the next class guys in and see what kind of commits they can get, really start working on their 2026 guys, getting those guys together and around each other and around the coaches. And Auburn's is this Big Cat weekend where they have a weekend where they do events and have a bunch of guys and, you know, do pool parties. I don't even know. I know Alabama has their summer cookout. Texas A&M does something weird. I don't really know. They do a lot.
Yeah, they're a cult.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a cult.
Male cheerleaders. but Big Cat weekend for Auburn was incredibly successful. One of the more successful Big Cat weekends in recent history for the Auburn Tigers. Auburn landed a total of 8 commitments just this past weekend, which is absolutely absurd. in both the 2025 and 2026 classes, 5 in the 2025 and then 3 in the 2026 class. Get that class started. That's going to be huge. Just to name off some of the guys that did commit, starting with that 2026 class, 3 guys committed within the span of like 3 hours for that 2026 class that Saturday morning. We had a 2026 elite edge, Hezzy Harris. Hezzy Kai is his first name. He goes by Hezzy. He's from Huntsville, Alabama. He's an edge linebacker. He will be a future 5-star in this class once the, you know, because the 2026 guys, they don't have 5 stars yet until they start their senior season. He was the number 22 player in the country and the number 4 player in the state of Alabama. You also added 2026 linebacker Shadarius Tootle, which is by far the best name I've ever heard in my life.
I was about to say that. Coming into
Auburn, I can't wait for him to make
a tackle. He's got tootled?
Yes. He just got tootled. That is amazing. He's the number 68 linebacker, or the number 68 player in the country at a Mobile, and the number 4 player in the state. And then J. Mike Garrett, guy that Auburn's really been battling with LSU with for him for multiple weeks. He visited Baton Rouge the Friday before Big Cat weekend, drove to Auburn Saturday morning and committed on campus on Saturday. He's from Gulf Shores, Alabama. Another elite linebacker. Josh Aldridge is really doing an incredible job with this linebacker class and preparing it for the future as well. And then talking about the guys coming up for this upcoming class, the 2025 class, got Blake Woodby, 4-star cornerback from Maryland, one of the top players in Maryland. Being able to steal him away from them has been huge. His teammate Bryce Deese committed a few weeks ago. He's a 4-star athlete. He'll play linebacker at Auburn. Then the 2 flips from Alabama, both Antonio Coleman and Derek Smith, getting both of those in-state guys away from the University of Alabama, flipping Antonio Coleman. He originally committed to Alabama.
Yeah, go ahead and tell the whole story.
Dude is just back to Alabama, and now he's flipped back to Auburn. So who knows with that kid? Who knows how many more times he's going to flip before signing day comes? And then Derek Smith, who was a 4-star athlete, number 2 athlete in the country. Alabama was recruiting him to play defensive back, and I think he really wanted to play wide receiver, and that's where Auburn sees him. That's where Hugh Freeze wants him, so that's why he flips. But getting a guy like that's impressive. And then, I mean, goodness gracious, getting Anquan Fagans as well. We've known Fagans has had this commitment date set for a long, long time. We knew that he was going to be at Big Cat weekend right before that commitment. We knew the importance of that would be huge. Saw tremendous steam, you know, go up for his recruitment for Auburn up to his commitment date. And the 4-star safety from Thompson High School goes ahead and commits. He's the number 4 player in the state of 2025. And then also Auburn lands Fagans' teammate. I believe he's an unranked. I don't think they rank kickers and punters just yet. But in the Coles Academy, he's the number 2 punter in the country. John McGuire from Thompson as well. It was an unbelievable weekend for Auburn. Auburn jumped from number 16 in the 2025 recruiting rankings all the way up to number 6. And then in the 2026 rankings, Auburn was sitting at number 6, and they jumped all the way to number 1. It's been a huge weekend for Auburn. I want to ask both of y'all and kind of get y'all's thoughts from an outsider's perspective. Obviously, I'm seeing, you know, who we're gaining steam on, who we could possibly get next, that sort of thing. What are you seeing from Hugh Freeze? What has Hugh Freeze done to, you know, have this type of unbelievable weekend?
I'll let Alex start on this one.
Well, I think Hugh Freeze, much more than Kalen DeBoer, has experience recruiting in the South. He coached at Ole Miss, so he has those connections there. And you look at Kalen DeBoer, he's from the West, in the Northwest. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have the connections and the recruiting tactics that Hugh Freeze has when it comes to being in the South. Now, Kalen DeBoer has the ability to with the coaching he has around him, but Hugh Freeze, being down here for a year longer than Kalen DeBoer, has a little bit more... what's the word I'm looking for here? Not integrity, but...
Experience.
Experience, yeah. Yeah. Recruiting down here, so... That kind of gives him the edge over a guy like Kalen DeBoer. And I think he's done an amazing job with Auburn, considering how bad they were with Brian Harsin. That program was in the dumps. And I know Gray's glad to be out of that 2-year purgatory with Brian Harsin. Mm-hmm. And I think Hugh Freeze has him in a better spot. But it doesn't mean a hill of beans what you do in the recruiting trail if you go out and only win 6 games with these type of recruits. And that's what Auburn has been accustomed to since, 2014? I mean, they got to get these good recruits, and then that season, they're 6-6, 7-5, barely making a bowl game, making the Birmingham Bowl, losing to Houston. I mean, it's all going to come down to what can Hugh Freeze do once he gets the recruits on the plains? Can he win football games? And that remains to be seen. I think once Peyton Thorne's gone and we get a new quarterback in for Auburn, I think it'll be a huge difference, because I'm not a big Peyton Thorne believer. So once that happens, I think this program will be on the up and up, and I do expect them to at least make the college football playoff in the 12-team format within the next 3 years if they get this recruiting the way it's been going.
Very bold statements from you recently, Alex. We kind of went in the same direction, how Hugh Freeze has had a year on Kalen DeBoer to kind of just get ingrained in his roots in the state and being able to really just go around and convince some of these guys who typically would be Alabama lands to come to Auburn and to try something different. And I think that goes back towards what Hugh Freeze has done in the past with when he was at Ole Miss. He is more of a traditional Southern guy. So it's more to say that people like these recruits believe in him to go ahead and know how to coach in the South. Not taking away from what Kalen DeBoer has done already, because I think he's surrounded himself by the right people, like you mentioned, Alex, to be able to get a head start on a random coach who just came into the SEC who has no experience recruiting in the South.
Right.
I think he's done a very great job with doing that. But he's a year behind you, Freeze. And I think you look at where Auburn is as a program right now, with the amount of top level recruits they are landing, it's half of the job. Half of the job is recruiting and being able to have success in that. The other half is being able to coach and win games and develop players. Because at the end of the day, stars don't matter. It's about what you do with the players you have and how you develop them. And Auburn hasn't done a terrific job of that thus far. And I think that is in order for that to change, Hugh Freeze has to make some drastic changes to the program and really have people back him up rather than sit behind what the boosters want him to do. And I think I can go into a whole story about how when Nick Saban took over, he basically told the boosters that he doesn't care what they think. And while that almost got him removed from the head coaching position, ended up paying off because Alabama went on to win a bunch of national championships. But in order to have success, Hugh Freeze needs to stick up to the boosters. I don't want to take away from what he's been able to do in the past. And I don't think the past few seasons at Auburn really reflect what kind of coach Hugh Freeze is, because I think you can go back to the Liberty days. and how successful he was at Liberty. So I think it's just a time thing. You can't just bite the bullet with like what you did with Brian Harsin. I know that's a completely different situation because he didn't have the type of recruiting Hugh Freeze had. But the success has not been there thus far. But like you said, Alex, I mean, I think success in the future is definitely possible. I don't know if I would go ahead and make the hot take of Auburn making the CFP in the next 3 years.
But both recruits they're getting, you would expect them to be.
Yeah, you would. But that's also a lot of pressure to put on a team and a bunch of young guys. I mean, this early on, especially since they haven't even stepped a foot on campus yet to go ahead and start practicing.
Yeah, that's true. I think Nathan made a good segue into my question for y'all. But first, I want to talk about a point that you mentioned, Nathan, the importance of everything going the right way in every aspect in a program. And I think, you know, with the boosters, and you gave the example of Nick Saban, you know, that almost got rid of Nick Saban early in his tenure at Alabama, and how different everything would be if that actually happened. And you gave the different story on the other side with Brian Harsin. I think you said what Hugh Freeze needs to do is he needs to step up. He needs to take control. He needs to be the CEO of this program. I think that is I would say Hugh Freeze was not prepared to do that when he took the job at Auburn. But I will say, you know, being a year and a half into this, into his tenure at Auburn, it looks like he is making the right moves, you know, getting rid of what's his name? It was our offensive
Philip Montgomery
last year. Yes. Getting rid of Philip Montgomery, getting a guy like Derek Nix, stealing him away from Ole Miss, you know, getting rid of Ron Roberts, you know, bringing in his staff, not only taking control, because I guarantee you Cadillac Williams would not be gone if Hugh Freeze hadn't taken control. You know, I really, really like Cadillac Williams, but Cadillac Williams had some internal things going on, you know, inside the program that only probably the head coach could see. And Hugh Freeze took control of that. If that was a booster situation, Cadillac's going nowhere because he's Cadillac Williams. He's important to Auburn University. So I do think he's taking that next step. I do think that he, in year one, took a step back from the team, took a step back from being the CEO like he needs to be, and was more hard on himself to recruit. That's why Auburn saw a lot of success in recruiting in the 2024 class. It's why they're seeing a lot of success in the 2025 class. I think Hugh Freeze knows you got to do the X's and O's, but you also got to have the Jimmys and Joes compete in this conference. But what I want to ask y'all both next is, this state is an unbelievable football state, and it's surrounded by unbelievable football states like Georgia and Florida and Texas and Mississippi and Tennessee and all. The Southeast is golden for football, and Alabama's right in the heart of it. And getting in-state recruits is so vital to your team's success, especially having an in-state rival like Alabama is to Auburn, or like Ole Miss is to Mississippi State, or like Clemson is to South Carolina, you know, et cetera. Getting those recruits, not only taking them away from Alabama, but also building through your state is so important. That way you can go out and you've got guys that, hey, I mean, you've got a pipeline. That's what it is. You know, everybody talking about college football 25 pipelines. That's what it is. Getting these in-state recruiters so important. You know, we saw over the past decade or two, Nick Saban has completely dominated the state in recruiting. When recruits grow up, they watch Alabama football. That's the place where they want to go. They want to go play under Nick Saban. And that's what they did. Nick Saban dominated the state. And it started with his first full class at Alabama in 2008. You know, 2007 wasn't his first full class. His 2008 class was his first full class. And he got 12 of the top 16 players in the state of Alabama, with the likes of Julio Jones, Courtney Upshaw, Mark Barron, Marcel Darius, studs to come in and completely change that program around. That is so huge. And obviously he did that for years and years and years and years, and made it to where Auburn couldn't compete for those in-state recruits. It was either Alabama or they're going elsewhere. However, Nick Saban is no longer on that Alabama sideline. And if you're looking at that from an Auburn's perspective, you know, just like y'all mentioned, Hugh Freeze has having a year ahead of Kalen DeBoer, also having that Southeastern experience, you know, with Kalen DeBoer not having it. And let me preface this right now. Alabama's got the number two recruiting class in the country right now. Kalen DeBoer and his staff are recruiting their tails off. They're recruiting incredibly. But Kalen DeBoer and their staff are seeming to go outside. They're wanting to bring people in to the Southeast. They're wanting to bring people into Alabama, which has worked for a lot of teams. But building through your state, it was so vital for Alabama for so many years that I believe that is where Hugh Freeze is taking this direction for this Auburn team. I'm not relating Hugh Freeze to Nick Saban at all. What I'm saying is Hugh Freeze is doing exactly what Nick Saban did in 2008 and in 2007. He's getting these in-state recruits. He's changing the mindset to these kids are not growing up and watching Alabama. They want to grow up and watch Auburn. They want to go play for Hugh Freeze. That's where he wants to take this direction of this program. Right now, or in Hugh Freeze's, I guess, not first full class. First full class will be 2025. But in that first class, the 2024 class, Auburn was able to land 6 of the top 10, including multiple flips from Georgia, from Texas A&M, from Alabama. Getting those top guys is huge. Because you look back at the state rankings over the past few years, it's hard to find a guy that committed Auburn. You find 5, 6, 7 guys committed to Alabama, and then another guy committed to Clemson, another guy going to Georgia or Tennessee or Texas or Ohio State or guys like that. And then in this upcoming class, Auburn has a chance to land 8 of the top 10 in the 2025 class, and they're also heavily involved with the other two. They're currently committed to Ohio State. So it seems like that is flipping in the direction of Auburn. Does that worry y'all at all from the in-state recruiting side? You know, because a lot of we've been talking about proof of concept. It, you know, Auburn's doing this after going 6-7 this past year, after losing to Mexico State horrifically, after losing to Maryland horrifically, after after getting blown out at LSU, coming so close to Alabama, coming so close to Georgia, but not getting over that hump. Not winning those games. What happens if Auburn wins 9 games this year, which they very well could do, or 8 games, or beat a team that they shouldn't beat, like Missouri, on the road? What happens then? What can Hugh Freeze sell then? As an Auburn fan, this gets me extremely excited. You know, looking forward for this program because it's only up from here. And just like you said, Alex, if they don't make the college football playoff with a new 12-team format in the next, you know, I would say 5 years, within the next 5 years, I think there's an issue there because of the recruits that they're landing, because of the blue chip prospects, and because of the direction of the program.
I don't think it worries me that Hugh Freeze is out recruiting Kalen DeBoer in the state as of right now, because recruits have had the experience of Hugh Freeze for two years at Auburn, and they don't know Kalen DeBoer that well. Kalen DeBoer's only been in Alabama for, what, 3-4 months? So these recruits don't know what Alabama's going to look like under Kalen DeBoer. While they know what Hugh Freeze is building at Auburn, they kind of know what Kalen DeBoer's building at Alabama, but they haven't seen it yet. They haven't really seen the performance on the field. And while Hugh Freeze's performance on the field wasn't great last year, I think there's a lot of excitement around the program right now with what he's built with the recruiting class and the transfer portal acquisitions he's had. So it doesn't scare me that he's out recruiting Alabama, because I think as Kalen DeBoer gets experience in the South and builds these relationships with these recruits and with these high school coaches, he'll get the opportunity to compete with Hugh Freeze at Auburn. Because as of right now, Kalen DeBoer has not built the relationship that Hugh Freeze has with the Thompson head coach and the Auburn high school head coach and all that. But once he hits a year under his belt like Hugh Freeze, I think it'll be neck and neck of who will get the best recruits in the state. And that's much better for Auburn because, as you said, Gray, Nick Saban was wiping the floor with Auburn in the in-state recruiting. So I think that's good for them. But I don't think it would have mattered regardless of who the head coaches were at Alabama and Auburn. With what the NIL is now, there was always going to be competition in the state for the recruits, much more than it was when Nick Saban was back recruiting. The NIL is going to make it more dispersed between all the schools, Alabama, Auburn, Georgia, Texas A&M, UAB might be in there, Troy. I mean, all these schools are going to be competing because they're going to throw the best NIL offers at these players. It's NFL free agency right now. So I don't think it worries anybody that Hugh Freeze is blowing Kalen DeBoer out of the water for 2026 and 2025 when it comes to in-state recruits. Because at the end of the day, it's Kalen DeBoer's first year. He's got a lot to learn when it comes to coaching in the South. But I'm excited to see what each of these coaches builds in their programs.
Yeah, I'll step in to the recruiting aspect first. I think I look at recruiting as a whole, not like just from the state. Obviously, the state plays a big portion of what you're able to do. And if you can't recruit your state properly, I don't think you're going to have success like you talked about, Gray. But like Alex has mentioned, Hugh Freeze has had a year to go around and meet with these different coaches, form relationships, build these bonds with recruits that Kalen DeBoer hasn't had the chance yet. And I think it's just opposite ends of the spectrum because Kalen DeBoer has he doesn't have this experience of being able to recruit in the South, being able to coach in the South, and that people haven't been able to see his full game plan, what he has for the future of Alabama. And while Hugh Freeze has kind of been able to show the process of what he needs to go through at Auburn to get them to be a successful school again. And I think there's worry in everything. I mean, there's worry in the unknown. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know how Auburn will do this upcoming season. I can come on here and tell you that we're going to go undefeated. We're going to go win the national championship with all the confidence in the world. I don't know that's going to happen. I don't know. I mean, there's opposite ends of the spectrum. No one really knows what's going to happen until we go and kick off football here in a few weekends. And at the end of the season, it's, a whole completely different discussion than the one we're having right now. So I think there's always a little bit of worry in everything. But I also try to keep everything in perspective that Kalen DeBoer has also done a terrific job of recruiting some of the bigger pipelines in the country. You look at the Texas pipeline, California, New York. I mean, you can keep going down the list. Some of the biggest pipelines in the nation, Kalen DeBoer has done a fantastic job of recruiting thus far. And that kind of, it sounds a little bit more confident saying, if he can go ahead and take care of business in those pipelines, why can't he come to Alabama and go ahead and do what Nick Saban did? And Alex made a great point about NIL and how it kind of disperses talent now across the nation. You look at, the past show we did, we talked about how many talented teams out there because of the fact that NIL has given these schools so many different opportunities to get some bigger recruits because they have the access to give these NIL deals to them. And I think it's a good thing for college football. And we can go down the whole regulations path and what needs to be done to kind of keep it in check, because I think it's gotten a little out of hand, like we mentioned before. But it has made college football way more competitive. And I think the 12-team college football, the playoff, I know we talked about the 14 playoff and how it's fainted, it might not make it more competitive, but I think that's the opposite. I think every team's still going to want an opportunity to fight for that spot. And it means even more for recruiting in the future, saying, hey, we went and made the 12-team college football playoff. We were able to do that, or we were able to host this big home game for the college football playoff. I think that does numbers for a university, regardless of what they do with NIL or not. That's just a big thing for recruiting. So I think there's worry all around. I mean, I think we can all agree with that, but I think it's just a matter of giving Kalen DeBoer time to be able to do what he needs to do. And then with Hugh Freeze in the future, with Auburn success in the future, I mean, that's all relative to, what happens in the season. Just like I talked about with, we don't know what Alabama's going to be looking towards the future, what's going to happen this season. We don't know what Auburn's going to be this coming season. We don't know how many games they win. I can sit here and tell you that it's going to be that same result on the field, but we don't know that. I mean, it's a completely different scenario, and we can't predict the future. So, I mean, we'll have a completely different discussion once this college football season wraps up and we have a better idea of what these head coaches are, what situations they're in currently. But as of right now, it's just this is the unknown.
moving on from Auburn recruiting and what's going on in the state with Kalen DeBoer and Hugh Freeze, let's talk about some rankings that were released recently by some news outlets and some people. Starting with ESPN's Bill Connolly, he ranked college football's top 25 players of the 21st century. Number one was Ndamukong Suh from Nebraska, the defensive lineman. Number two, Baker Mayfield, the quarterback from Oklahoma. Three, Cam Newton from Auburn. Four, Vince Young. Five, Ed Reed from Miami. Six, Tim Tebow. Seven, Reggie Bush. Eight, Brian McKinney, the offensive lineman from Miami. Nine, Joe Burrow. 10, Larry Fitzgerald, the wide receiver from Pitt. 11, Terrell Suggs from Arizona State, defensive end. 12, Joe Thomas, the offensive lineman from Wisconsin. 13, Khalil Mack, linebacker from Buffalo. 14, Aaron Donald, defensive tackle from Pitt. 15, David Pollack, defensive end from Georgia. I know Nathan's a big David Pollack fan. 16, Deshaun Watson. 17, Roy Williams, defensive back from Oklahoma. 18, Kyler Murray, Oklahoma quarterback. 19, Devonta Smith. 20, Lamar Jackson. 21, Justin Blackmon. 22, Will Anderson. 23, Tyrann Mathieu. 24, Julius Peppers. And then 25, Jonathan Taylor. Pretty exhaustive list there, guys.
Awful.
But do we agree with it in its entirety? Or are there certain issues we have with it?
Oh, do we have enough time to break down this entire list and how crappy it is?
I don't think we have enough time to break down the entire list, but give y'all's top five players of the 21st century. And I know we weren't around to watch the Ed Reeds of the world realistically, and we kind of got to watch Vince Young because we get to see the Rose Bowl highlight every year. But who do y'all think was the top 25 or top five players of the 21st century that y'all got to watch?
I'll let Greg go first in this one.
Okay. Well, first, I'm just going to start off with my issue here. Then I will gladly give my top five. My issue is Baker Mayfield being number two and Cam Newton being number three. What? Cam Newton didn't lose a game as a starter.
I think it's just Baker Mayfield had 3 years of college football starting experience, and then Cam Newton and Joe Burrow only had one, or I guess two for Joe Burrow, but one for Cam Newton.
Baker Mayfield didn't win a national championship. I don't understand how he can be two and not win it. Like, Baker Mayfield should be on the list. I'm not harping on Baker Mayfield, but to put him over guys like Cam Newton, like Vince Young, like Tim Tebow, like Joe Burrow, that gets me a little concerned, because just because he played 3 years of starting experience doesn't mean that he was better than the guys who were holding up a trophy at the end of the year. It just doesn't make any sense at all. Okay, but I'll give my top five. I'm going to be biased, and I'm going to put Cam Newton number one. This is a guy that did not lose a game. He was 14-0 as a college starter, dominated through the SEC, and he led an Auburn team that had no business going even 6-6 to a national championship, an SEC championship, and a national championship. That Auburn offense only had one other player with that played one season in the NFL, and it was Darvin Adams, and he was not successful at all. That's an easy number one, but I can hear arguments for otherwise. My number two is really hard to go away from Reggie Bush, because no, we didn't really get to watch him live, us three at least. But this dude was a human highlight film, and he was unbelievable. At USC and unstoppable. I'll gladly put him at number two. Number three, and my second quarterback on this list is Tim Tebow. I would put Tim Tebow ahead of Joe Burrow and Vince Young and those guys. Probably because I have him over Vince Young because I was able to watch Tim Tebow. But I have him over Joe Burrow because he was sustained success for multiple years and winning a national championship as well. When Joe Burrow in 2018 was not very good for LSU. He was okay. And they went to a New Year's Six Bowl because that LSU team was unbelievable. And then when Joe Burrow took that next step in 2019 is when they went crazy. So I would put Tim Tebow ahead there. That's three. And Ndamukong Suh was absolutely fantastic. Yeah, I don't agree. He's number one. He was unbelievable. I'll put him at four. I got to have a defensive player on my list. And then do I go with Vince Young or do I go with Joe Burrow or do I go with Ed Reed for number five? Man, that's a tough decision. Just because I was able to watch him. Joe Burrow in 2019 was a stat stuffer of unbelievable proportions. I guess I'll go with Joe Burrow at five. You know, player, probably would go Ed Reed, but because I was able to watch him and how unstoppable he was in 2019, how unstoppable he made LSU in 2019. I'll go Joe Burrow at number five. So Cam, Reggie, Tim Tebow, who did I have at four? Ndamukong Suh and Joe Burrow.
Interesting. I think, you know, there are some similarities to what I had. I had Cam Newton number one. Freaking nature. I hated watching him, but you also like enjoy it secretly. You don't want anyone to know.
That's how I felt about Bryce Young, by the way.
Yeah. Gosh. And it, you know, made it even worse when he went to the NFL and I had to watch him on the Panthers and being a Saints fan. But yeah, Cam Newton, I think he was just so generational and he did so many great things for Auburn and the game of college football. He's just that historic. Mm-hmm. At two, gosh, this is hard. At two, I'd probably go Tim Tebow, just because the impact he had on the college football universe at the time. You talked about where Florida was, how he led that team to the national championship. We're not going to talk about the number of arrests for that team either. But it was Georgia before Georgia right now. But Tim Tebow was just that inspirational with what he did on the field, and he was a true leader. And even now you see what he's doing off the field. And just shows what type of person he is. I'd probably go Vince Young at three. I think you look at what he was able to do at Texas, especially in that national championship game where they had no business winning that game. I mean, everyone had already written them off. They had given the trophy to USC, and Vince Young comes in and rips their heart out. I think Vince Young was just a terrific player. And then I'd probably go Reggie Bush at four. And this is a little bit easier for me because I get to watch him on the Saints. So I was a little, I benefited from that. But going back and watching, I mean, he was a human highlight reel. You are correctly stating that. And he's, I mean, you go back to thinking about that USC team, just unbelievable talent. And then I'd probably go Ed Reed five. I think you talk about a defensive unstoppable ability. I mean, Ed Reed was just all around the field, just a ball hog. He'd take people's heads off. I mean, when you talk about a traditional like defensive player, Ed Reed, just someone who's just going to come make your life a living hell. And he did exactly that.
I think number one, I'm going to make it a clean sweep with Cam Newton. And then the second best player, I think, was probably Reggie Bush. As y'all both mentioned, we never really got to see him play live at USC. Watching the highlights and everything he did, he was probably the best running back of the 21st century. There's no doubt about it. I think the next closest person's probably Derrick Henry. Mm-hmm. And at number three,
he didn't make the list, by the way.
He didn't make the list.
It's crazy. Yeah. Ridiculous.
At three, I have to put Vince Young. Watching that USC Texas Rose Bowl year after year on Longhorn Network, because it was the only thing on the network at all times. I got sore and tired of watching it, but what Vince Young did in that game that entire season was special, and I had to put him at three. Four, I'm gonna put Devonta Smith winning the Heisman that year.
I respect it.
The best wide receiver season of all time, in my opinion. he was unstoppable. I mean, if you go back and look at the games and the stats from each game, the Ole Miss game, the game against Ohio State. I mean, in the national championship, he only played like the first half, right, Nathan?
Yeah, he only played the first half. He got injured, but he still put up numbers for an entire game. He was probably the player on here that put up the best video game numbers I've ever seen. I mean, you talk about going out and just like continuously throwing to one wide receiver over and over again in the video game. That's what Devontae Smith was. So I respect you putting him up there.
Me too, honestly. He fooled the Patriots in making them think that Mac Jones was an NFL quarterback. That was impressive. Well,
I think Mac Jones is an NFL quarterback. I don't think Bill Belichick is a great coach.
And then at five, I never really got to see Ndamukong Suh play at Nebraska. Never really seen highlights of him, so I can't accurately rank him on my list. I'm down to three guys here defensively: Aaron Donald, Khalil Mack, and Will Anderson Jr. And I got to see Will Anderson Jr. play multiple times, and I got to see Aaron Donald play too. But the dominance Will Anderson played with against left tackles and right tackles, dude was unstoppable. And that sophomore season was the best defensive season I've seen in my lifetime. And he was amazing. His junior season wasn't great. Do I have that right, or was it his junior season that wasn't great? Then
his junior season was like a step back. I mean, it was still pretty, I mean, by anyone's standards, it was a pretty great season, but it was a setback from the sophomore season. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I still think if Derek Thomas was not in existence, we'd be talking about Will Anderson as the best Alabama defensive player of all time.
Yes.
So I think I had to put him at five right now, but if I had gotten to see Ndamukong Suh play at Nebraska, I'm fairly certain I would have put him at five.
I do want to bring this back up though. Derrick Henry did not make the list, and
Jonathan Taylor,
Jonathan Taylor did. And
if anyone was going to make
Justin Blackmon also made the list.
Justin Blackmon was pretty good though. I believe he won two Blitnikoff awards at Oklahoma State. So,
in terms of running backs though, that I know we didn't get to watch Reggie Bush play. And I know all three of us were like, he's a human highlight film, you know, just, you know, talking about what he did at the Saints. It was incredible. Derrick Henry was the most unstoppable running back of our lifetime. Why in the world is he not on this list and like high on this list? He should be top 15 at least in this list and number two in running backs.
I think it's just because Jonathan Taylor has like the stats, the records and the stats, and Derrick Henry doesn't. Big Ten. But Derrick Henry, that 2015 season,
golly,
he literally put Alabama on his back offensively and led them to win a national championship against a very good Clemson team. I don't know if you remember.
Jay Coker was their quarterback that year.
We did not throw the ball. I'm sorry. That's insane. I think another guy that comes to mind, I think he would be at the bottom of the list, but I think it's one of the best defensive backs I've seen play ever, and he was on that historic 2015 team too. You talk about Minkah Fitzpatrick and the amount of turnovers he would get, and he would just take it to the house every time, and he was just dominant. That I think it gets taken away from just because that whole defense was so dominant, but Minkah was such a leader on that defense. I think he deserves to have some, maybe an honorable mention to make the list, if not be on the list, because he was insane.
Yeah, there were some honorable mentions on the list, I believe. Yeah, the honorable mentions were Michael Crabtree, Dwight Freeney, Robert Gallery, RG3, Calvin Johnson, Derek Johnson, Luke Kuechly, Trevor Lawrence, Marcus Mariota, and Christian McCaffrey. So Derek Henry did not even get a mention.
That's another guy. He was unbelievable at Stanford. He was incredible at Stanford. Talk about an all-purpose guy, a guy that did everything for a Stanford offense. Wow.
I think Manti Te'o got left off as well. If you think about that season he had, he probably should have won Heisman. Mm-hmm. But if he didn't
maybe
have
if he didn't get girlfriend and then get absolutely slapped in the national championship.
But I think if he didn't have the fake girlfriend issue, he probably would have won the Heisman over Johnny Manziel, because that dude had an amazing season. But it's hard to put him over guys like Julius Peppers and Tyrann Mathieu and Will Anderson Jr. So I can understand that. I think he deserved a mention by Bill Connolly. But he missed out on a lot of good talent. And it's hard to hit everybody when it comes to putting somebody on this list, because you're always going to miss somebody. You're going to miss a Derrick Henry or a Christian McCaffrey. You can't include everybody in that top 25.
Yeah.
Talking about the other list that was released recently.
I was going to do this. Yeah.
Ranking NFL head coaches. Nathan.
Go ahead and start.
Let's go ahead and start with the worst ranked head coach in the NFL, being Saints head coach Dennis Allen. Nathan, do we agree with Dennis Allen being the worst head coach in the NFL, considering what the Saints have done under him with Derek Carr?
I mean, I don't think it's all his fault, but yeah, he's probably one of the worst, if not the worst head coach. We have no offensive identity. We can't figure out what we're doing half the time. Our defense, even though he's a great defensive coach, I don't know where our defense is at the games we played last season. They just decided not to show up. Our secondary has taken a step back. Our defensive line is not getting to the quarterback as much anymore. I don't know what the whole issue is with that. Not to mention our draft skills have been so poor, and
Trevor Penning, Peyton Turner, maybe
when I claw my eyes out every single time we draft, we can't do anything right, it seems like. And no matter how much I beg for us to go into a rebuild and just go ahead and take the cap hit and just completely suffer for the next 2 decades, because that's what's going to happen. And we continue to try to put this crappy mediocre team together. And we decide, oh yeah, Derek Carr, he's the best option we have at quarterback. I really hope Derek Carr does not start. Especially with the things that people have been saying about Spencer Rattler in training camp. If Derek Carr starts the first 3 games, I will be surprised. I don't even know what I'll do. I just had to turn the TV off. I won't watch the Saints this year. I don't want to go through this pain of watching Dennis Allen continuously coach games. And always, he'll do the same. I go back to when Jameis Winston was starting, and we went in first week of the season, we will and absolutely beat the brakes off Green Bay. And then we just turn around and we crap our pants week after week. And I'm like, Dennis Allen, what are we doing? You got to make adjustments in the game, son. You're not calling the right plays. Why are we running on 3rd-and-10? Alvin Kamara cannot do it by himself, son.
He's running mad suggestions. He's like, oh, yep, inside zone, oh, outside zone, halfback toss.
His favorite play is mass protect punt, because that's what we do half the time, more and more offense.
Greg, do you recommend for Nathan's team to enter a 20-year rebuild?
Yeah.
Because you're a Hornets fan, so you know all about 20-year rebuilds. So yeah, do you recommend it for Nathan's sanity?
No. I'm sorry, I got to pull myself together after that. The Saints are just the weirdest situation possible, and the weirdest situation in the NFL. And Dennis Allen is a huge reason for that. The whole front office is a huge reason for that. There's the decisions that they've made over the past few years are the entire reason for that. And they're not in the rebuild yet, because they don't have a future at quarterback. They're not the worst team in their division. They're in such a odd situation that most of the teams are not in, because most of the really bad teams in the NFL have a young quarterback that they've drafted that they're trying to work up. Maybe they've got some young talent around it on the offensive side of the ball. Maybe they just went out and got a new coach. Something, they're doing something. The Saints aren't. They're really not. And the Saints it reminds me so much of what the Charlotte Hornets are doing on in the NBA. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. The Saints do need to blow it up. I expect Spencer Rattler to be the quarterback for the New Orleans Saints by the end of this year. I don't expect Derek Carr to be there. I'm expecting a lot of trades and a lot of draft capital obtained.
We hope.
That's what the Saints need to do at this point. They're in such a weird spot that they need to blow it up. Blowing it up now will be a lot better than blowing it up in 5 years, when the Panthers are way ahead, when the Falcons are way ahead, when the Buccaneers are way ahead. Because that's where the Saints don't need to be at in 5 years, because all those teams are doing something.
Just wait. I'm going to go bust out my paper bag again. We'll be the Aints yet again. It'll be the best.
The Saints and the Bucks are kind of in the same situation, though, if you think about it. Because with the Bucks, yeah, Baker Mayfield, a quarterback. Was that last season a fluke? Situation. Was it not? I know they have better receiving weapons, but the Saints have Chris Olave, but the Buccaneers have Godwin and Evans, and they drafted a couple key players, and they got a good offensive line. The Saints, Ryan Ramchick's out for the season. You got Trevor Penning at the other tackle position. Draft Talisu Fuaga. Your defense, Cam Jordan's about on his way out of the door, out of the NFL. Mm-hmm. But these teams are very similar, where if they don't figure out the direction they're trying to head into, they're going to fall behind in the NFC South, because the Panthers appear to have a direction. I hope they figure it out. Hope Bryce Young figures it out. But they have a young quarterback. They have a first-year head coach who I think can do pretty good things for that franchise. He made Baker Mayfield look good.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got the Falcons. They have two good quarterbacks, something the Saints can't say they have. They don't even have one good quarterback.
And okay, I'm just waiting to turn on the TV one day and it's going to be Impractical Jokers. And I'm just going to be like, the whole episode is just going to be, oh, we drove the Saints franchise into the ground. Oh, Dennis Allen, go ahead, call the worst play ever. Yep, and that's going to be in the entire episode. That's what I'm hoping it is.
Joke's on you, Nathan. Dennis Allen is Murr in a mask. That's about the way he coaches.
Oh my god.
And then the second worst NFL head coach they had was Bears' Matt Eberflus. Do y'all think Eberflus is worse than Dennis Allen, or do y'all think that's accurate?
I don't know. You go off the future of the Bears, and they have way much more of a future. And I think Eberflus has an opportunity to prove himself as a head coach rather than having to sit there like Dennis Allen does and just drive the team into the ground like he already has. So I think that's why he's number two and not number one.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The Bears' future with Caleb Williams and Roma Dunze and DJ Moore and that offense, the Eberflus has a chance to fly up those rankings within the next 2 or 3 years with that talent, with that young core that they've got on that, especially on that Bears offense, that Dennis Allen and the Saints just don't have. And I say yet, I want them to blow it up. I want the Saints to get back to where they were. I want them to be competitive again. Otherwise it's just going to be boring having two automatic wins in a couple of years. But they're not there right now.
Following Eberflus, you had Gerard Mayo, the Patriots head coach, Brian Daboll, the Giants,
that's
Jets,
insane.
Robert Saleh. Six was the Titans, Brian Callahan. Seven, Buccaneers, Todd Bowles. These are top 10 worst. Eight was Antonio Pierce from the Raiders. Nine, Dave Canales from the Panthers. And then 10, Mike McDonald from the Seahawks. Y'all think that's an accurate top 10 of the worst head coaches in the NFL? There's a lot of first-year guys that I don't think deserve to be
even
ranked that low, because you look at Gerard Mayo, he's got thrown into a terrible situation. That team is in a dumpster fire.
Yeah.
I don't think it's fair for him. You look at Brian Callahan. I'm not a big fan of Brian Callahan as a head coach, but maybe he can figure it out in Tennessee. They brought in a lot of veterans. Mm-hmm. And then you look at Antonio Pierce. That team loves Antonio Pierce. They played for him last season. They won a lot of games because Antonio Pierce was the head coach. Mm-hmm. But does a team have a quarterback? Gardner Minshew, Aiden O'Connell. Mm-hmm. They're about the Saints level of quarterback play. Dave Canales at nine. He made Baker Mayfield look competent. I can't say that enough. If you can make Baker Mayfield look like a competent quarterback in the NFL.
Wait to see what Bryce Young is able to do. Yep.
And then you look in Seattle, he made Geno Smith look good.
Mm-hmm.
To have him ranked as the ninth worst head coach in the NFL is absurd. And then Mike McDonald at 10, he had the Ravens as the third best defense in the league last year. So I don't get these rankings. And you have guys like Mike McCarthy left off, Jonathan Gannon, Nick Sirianni. I mean, Mike McCarthy has had the best roster in the NFL for the past 2 years and has won one playoff game. One. He got demolished last year.
Mm-hmm.
So to have him not, I would have him as the third worst head coach. Mm. Hey, you can make an argument for him to be the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I agree with the whole Brian Daboll. I mean, being number four on the list, He goes from running coach of the year, and then he has to deal with Daniel Jones not knowing how to play the position at quarterback. He looks like, I mean,
walking.
We'll go back. I mean, it looked like he was trying to figure out Pee Wee football over again, and you're going to your head going, no, what do I want to do? What I just want to go home and play video games. That's all Daniel Jones cares about. I don't know. It's a whole deal because, you know, you gave him this big contract, and it's like, okay, well, he's obviously not the quarterback of the future. You go ahead and lose Saquon in the offseason. So I feel bad for Brian Daboll. I think he's a terrific offensive head. He did fantastic things with Daniel Jones at quarterback. Let's be honest.
He won a playoff game with Daniel Jones.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, and then we're going to go and put him number four on this list because Daniel Jones doesn't know what he's doing. I'm sorry. He's suffering. He is just such a great offensive mighty coach. And I think that if he went to go coach an actual contender, he would actually have like so much more success. But since he has to go and coach the Giants, who haven't been the same since Odell Beckham and Eli Manning left, it's just like instantly, oh, you get put on the worst head coach list. It's unrealistic.
It seems like this list is very inconsistent, and it's trying to rank situations and coaches. It's very inconsistent in trying to do the same thing. Like, are you trying to rank the situations? Because if you're ranking the situations right now, the Giants probably not a great situation with Daniel Jones at quarterback. So it makes a little sense, but you can't tell me Brian Daboll should be number four. And all these first year guys, are you ranking their situation or are you ranking their resume and their potential for success at those locations? Like Jerod Mayo, terrible situation. My gosh, horrible situation. Like Dave Canales. Dude was a stud in these past few years, making Baker Mayfield look like a not even just a good quarterback, like a great quarterback, making Geno Smith look like a great quarterback. What can he do with Bryce Young? Why is he on this list? You know, the Panthers situation is not perfect, but it's better than a lot of these teams. So I don't understand what we're going off of here. That doesn't make any sense. Are we ranking the coach's ability? Are we ranking their situation? Are we ranking their past? It's very inconsistent. It's a terrible list.
It's probably the worst. It's worse than the other list we talked about, I think.
I don't know. I don't know. There's a lot of things off that
Baker
list.
Baker Mayfield was number two on that list. I don't know.
At least he had something to back it up. This guy just has Jerod Mayo sitting at three for no reason.
This is true.
It's true.
This is very true.
I mean, at least the person can make an argument for Baker Mayfield had 3 years of good college experience and stats and won a Heisman. Mm-hmm. And Cam Newton only had 1 year, and even though he won a national championship, I like Baker Mayfield's stats more. And if it wasn't for Georgia having the college football game of the century, Baker Mayfield would have made the college football final and may have won it. I don't know if they would have, but it took Georgia playing the most perfect game, best game they ever played to beat Baker Mayfield.
Sure.
But this list, having these head coaches ranked this way, is absurd, especially for the first year guys. They already have enough pressure on them. They don't need a list coming out that says they suck. They really, when they don't.
Wait a minute.
I think there was probably two head coaching hires I didn't like this offseason, that being Brian Callahan and Dan Quinn. But I still wouldn't have them ranked as a bottom five head coach in the NFL because I don't know what they're going to look like in Washington and in Tennessee. We have yet to see what that product looks like on the field. And it kind of ties back into Kalen DeBoer and Hugh Freeze discussion we had earlier, where we don't know what that product's going to look like on the field next year. So I think this ranking is so, so terrible.
I still can't believe that Mike Vrabel wasn't catching at Tennessee anymore. How crazy that they fired him.
Well, that's all time we have for today. Thank you for listening and watching, Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.